uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And top of the morning or afternoon, as the case may be to you, friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations all across the United States. Nancy Pelosi, also on Sirius Satellite Radio, on CRN Digital, WhiteRoseSociety.org, RadioPower.org, and podcasting on Apple's iTunes. Nancy Pelosi somewhat says the unsayable, right? She just comes right out and says... She says that she talked to President Bush about what was going on in Louisiana and the failures of FEMA. And he's like, well, what's wrong? You're kidding. I'm sure there are some of you out there going, no, come on. You're just making that up. No, seriously. George Bush is like, well, I didn't know that there's a problem. Is there a problem? I think Brownie's doing a heck of a job, after all. No.
He chose someone with absolutely no credentials. And you know what? When I said to the president that he should fire Michael Brown, he said, why would I do that? I said, because of all that went wrong, with all that didn't go right last week. And he said, what didn't go right? Oblivious, in denial, dangerous.
And now, of course, the right-wing websites are weighing in. We have Newsmax.com, which has published a story dated Dateline yesterday, September 7th. The headline, 1999 hurricane swamped Clinton's FEMA. Yes, my friends, it's all Bill Clinton's fault. Didn't you know it was coming? I mean, as soon as the New York Times announced that they were putting Karl Rove in charge of managing this whole thing, all the publicity and PR for the Bush administration, immediately things started to click. It started to run like a well-oiled machine. The talking points started arriving to talk show hosts all across the country. Direct the blame to the mayor. Direct the blame to the governor. Point out those pictures of those buses on Drudge. Why didn't the mayor get the buses out? The governor said in the Washington Post that the governor was late in asking for aid. It was a lie, by the way. A lie from a senior administration official. But like a well-oiled machine, it just kept cranking along. You had Hannity out there. You had Limbaugh talking about, oh, it's a failure of the welfare state. It's a lot of African-Americans there. They must all be on welfare in Limbaugh's world. If somebody's black, they've got to be on welfare, right? Tragically, Limbaugh is... I just self-censored. The metaphor that almost came out of my mouth probably would have... gotten the FCC down on us. But you know where I think, in all probability, his head is much of the time. In any case, the machine was just running so smoothly. They locked down the city of New Orleans. They get the reporters out. No more pictures of body bags. No more pictures of coffins. No more pictures of dead bodies themselves. Let's control the news coming out. Let's cut the communications lines to Jefferson Parish. Let's get absolute control of the situation. Because the only way you can have a Potemkin village, the only way that you can have these phony press conferences, the only way that you can have the American people think that George Bush is doing just a fine job, thank you very much, is if two things happen. Number one, if you convince the Americans that the problem was the hurricane... and the problem was not the hurricane. It wasn't even that the problem was the response to the hurricane. The problem was the flood. And the flood came about because the levees broke, and the levees broke in part because the Bush administration denied the funds that had been allocated during the Clinton administration to upgrade the levees so that they could handle this kind of an event. And then more people died because the day after the levees broke, FEMA did nothing. And the day after the levees broke, FEMA did nothing. And the day after the levees broke, and on it goes. But number one, if they can convince Americans, oh, you know, it just all was the hurricane, they're halfway there. And number two, if they can absolutely begin to manage the news cycle. Step one, get John Roberts out there as fast as possible. Let's start talking about this stuff. Let's start talking about anything except the incompetence of the Bush administration. And give us a day or two, give us a breather of a day or two where we can actually start getting stuff in place, get things going, get this thing working right, so that then we can have Bush go down there and walk around and say, yeah, we're doing everything, everything's just fine, thank you very much. You know, these polls, they say, you know, is Bush responsible? No, of course not, it's a hurricane. No, I'm sorry, it's not the hurricane. It's a levee system that didn't have the money. The Army Corps of Engineers, 3-4 years ago, please give us this money so that we can upgrade these levees. I mean, it was just pure and simple, so clear and so obvious to anybody. This was just a matter of time. This was a disaster waiting to happen. Congressman Earl Blumenauer, congressman from Oregon. I was interviewing him this morning on my local program on KPOJ. Congressman Earl Blumenauer, In late December, early January, went over to Indonesia to tour the storm damage from the tsunami. He comes back to the United States, and in January of 2005, 9 months ago, pretty much to the week, 9 months ago, Earl Blumenauer gets up on the floor of the House of Representatives and says, this thing, he said specifically, this could just as easily have happened in New Orleans. I mean, he just lays it right. In fact, here's the exact quote. This is from an article in The Hill. Keep in mind, this was January 2000, well, it says in the story 2004. It's the 2004 tsunami. Yeah, of course, it was December 2004. It was January 2005. On January 26th, Earl Blumenauer said the hurricane hitting New Orleans would lead to, now quoting the congressman, on the floor of the Congress, a 30-foot wall of water hitting the city, causing thousands of deaths and $100 billion in damage in New Orleans. He said, and I quote, the experience of Southeast Asia should convince us all of the urgent need for congressional action. He's speaking of New Orleans. Prevention and planning will pay off. Maybe the devastation in Southeast Asia will encourage us to act before disaster strikes. 3 months before that, back in September of 2004, 1 year ago this week or next week, Blumenauer, he was talking about the potential for a hurricane. He said the damage inflicted by a hurricane might represent the loss of the city of New Orleans. Now is the time to deal with policies that will make a difference protecting people. The Republicans' response? Thanks, Earl, but you're a Democrat, so shut up and go back to your office. So now, the Republican talking points, the machine is out there, it's running full tilt boogie. It's Clinton's fault. The latest of the talking points, this today. Democrats led by Senator Hillary Clinton are blaming FEMA for failing to respond adequately to the Hurricane Katrina disaster, but FEMA officials didn't do much better under less taxing conditions when the floods that followed Hurricane Floyd left tens of thousands stranded up and down the eastern seaboard wondering what happened to federal rescuers. Ain't it incredible? When the Bush administration does anything, if it works out, we had a marvelously successful invasion of Iraq. Well, actually, we did. The invasion was successful. It's not hard to predict that the most powerful military machine in the world, the United States, can knock over a third-rate, third-world country that has been starved to death for 8 years under sanctions. Where their air force has been literally bombed to smithereens. Where they're using 30-year-old weapons. I mean, it's not hard to predict that we would have won. And so we have this successful invasion. George W. Bush gets up and, I'm taking credit for this one. We had an enormously successful invasion. right? We went in there, we took care of them, we took them out. It's, well, George W. Bush.
My fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Yeah. And then, you know, basically takes credit for it. Now, he didn't say, and Clinton's helping build up the military had anything to do with that? No. But if anything goes wrong, 9/11, biggest intelligence failure in the history of the United States. Something goes wrong. Biggest intelligence failure in the history of the United States. 9/11. 56 specific warnings that came in to George W. Bush and Condi Rice, ranging from warnings that Osama bin Laden was planning on hijacking commercial aircraft. Now, why didn't they just say to the airlines, this whole thing could have been prevented. If Bush had simply taken any of these warnings and said to the commercial airlines, you must, within the next week, harden your cockpit doors, put locks on them. I mean, you've got the TSA right now saying, you know, we're going to stop taking small knives away from people. Why? Because the cockpit doors are hardened. The flight attendants aren't all that happy about it, frankly, but nobody's going to get to a pilot. I'll tell you, I was on a flight the other day, and it just you know, there are times you can't even get up and go to the bathroom. Because they lock that down. They just shut the door, and that's it. You can't even get up there if one of those pilots is going to open the door and use the bathroom themselves. I mean, they got it. But the Republicans didn't want to do that. In fact, this was something that was proposed more than 20 years ago when the hijackings were occurring and airplanes were being hijacked to Cuba, and the airline industry lobbied against it because they said it would cost millions of dollars. And the Republicans said, fine. And many of the conservative Democrats as well. They just rolled over. If Bush had taken those warnings and simply said, harden your cockpit doors, we would not have had 9/11. And he had the warnings. In fact, months before that, almost a year, several months before 9/11, he had been in Europe, and he was at a G8 meeting, and he had to evacuate to a U.S. aircraft carrier and spend the night because there was a warning that bin Laden was going to hijack commercial airplanes and fly them into his hotel. And then months later, after 9/11, Condi says, oh, we never could have imagined that anybody would turn an airplane into a missile. Excuse me? All you have to do is harden the cockpit doors. But anyhow, so now... When these things happen, oh, it was all Clinton's fault. He screwed up the intelligence. Well, now, Hurricane Katrina, it's all Clinton's fault. The talking points, spin is moving along. 20 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
He took all the trees and put them in a tree museum.
And welcome back, my friends. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Roberta's with us in Jackson, Mississippi. And Roberta, we were speaking off the air for just a second, and you said that you were trying to figure out who to contact.
Right.
What's the situation that you have there?
Right, well, I got 13 people in the house, and they contacted everybody that's shown on TV, FEMA, Red Cross, everybody, to try to get some information. They're trying to get housing. They're trying to get some counsel stability. They got kids that need to go to school, and everybody's turning them away. And I'm going to tell you, Tom, they talk to the people like they're trash, like they are not even human, and they're depressed. They're feeling real bad about themselves right now, and I'm doing the best I can to keep the spirits up in the house. I'm the only one in there working right. Well, now I ain't going to say that because my office, they did find a job. but I'm the only one bringing money right now because I don't know when they get paid.
So you have people who have evacuated from as a result of the hurricane. You've got people
right.
in your house, 13 people in your house. My suggestion is that you call your member of Congress. And right now, David Poole, our producer, one of our producers, is on the phone. He's trying to find out who your member of Congress is. We'll give you that phone number in just a second. The other thing that you were telling me about is a battle over that you said white people who had died in this tragedy are being embalmed and black people who had died in this tragedy are not?
No, they're being embalmed, but they're being embalmed by white people. And
uh-huh.
the black people are pretty upset about that because, you know, why do they get all this, to embalm all the blacks on a regular basis? How many black people go to a white embalmer, you know?
So, but could it be that the black funeral homes have been wiped out?
Well, they're not letting them embalm the people.
Okay. Well,
they're leaving tomorrow to go find out about that. There's going to be probably a big ruckus about that.
Right, because one of your relatives is in that business. Okay, I just found out your congressman is Gene Taylor. So,
okay.
So you want to make a note, Gene Taylor, and the phone number to call is 1-877. It's toll free. It's a free call. 1-877, and then just dial these letters on the keypad. SOB, USOB.
And that's Gene Taylor.
Right, and then just say, and when you get, and that'll get you the Capitol operator, and you just say, I'd like the office of Congressman Gene Taylor, please, and explain to that member of Congress who you are, where you are, and what's going on. And if you don't get any help there, if you don't get any satisfaction, call me back, and I'll put you in contact with Congressman Bernie Sanders' office, who I know is always willing to help out folks, even though he's not their representative.
Okay, I'm calling right now.
Okay, great. Roberta, thanks for the call, and good luck.
Thank you.
Godspeed.
Good
to hear from you.
All right.
My goodness, 27 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Michael in North Carolina on the line. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
I love the show.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you, when are you going to run for office?
I'm never going to run for office, Michael. there are some people who just, they're not electable, and I'm one of them.
I think you'll be electable. I mean, you're telling the truth like it is.
Well, I can do a good talk show, but I can't. It would make me crazy to have to deal with all that compromise and meetings and all that boring stuff. I'm sorry, I'm 100 out of
5. If you did run, I will vote for you, and I will be on your team.
Well, bless you, Michael. Thank you.
I wanted to come in on your rant a while ago about the FEMA not working in 99 when Clinton was in office.
Yeah.
That's not true because I'm from Rocky Mountain and we got flooded out the same way.
From Hurricane Floyd?
Yeah, Hurricane
uh-huh.
Floyd. And when that flood came through 3 o'clock in the morning, people were, the FEMA people was knocking on people's doors trying to get them out, National Guard and everything. So it was more organized then than it is now from my point of view.
Well, you had food and everything from FEMA. It shouldn't surprise us that these right-wing websites would be lying about it in an attempt to blame Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it just, in my mind, what it demonstrates is the absolute, not just the moral bankruptcy of the Reich in this country, but also the desperation that they're experiencing, that they've got to turn to blaming Bill Clinton for
right.
Hurricane Katrina. I mean, it's just pretty soon you're going to hear them blaming Bill Clinton for not having rebuilt the levees. You know,
that's right.
And of course, you know, there was work being done on them, but it's the last couple of years here was when they really got moving, and then the Bush administration said, "No, we're going to cut the funding on it. Just cut it right out." Michael, thanks for the call.
Hey, thank you.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's just I am in awe of the right wing spin machine. And frankly, a lot disgusted. 29 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Photographer smile, take a break for a while. Take a risk, do your very best. Take 5 points.
And welcome back, my friends. 33 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics. 1-800-511-MAX. M-A-C-S. 1-800-511-MACS, where you can get all the information about the new, brand new iPod. Apparently, it's got no moving parts, no hard drive. Isn't this cool? We're actually going to try. I want to get somebody on to educate me about this. This is one of those technological steps I have not yet taken. So, fascinating. Welcome back to our program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Thanks to the folks at the Pottery by the Bay in Charleston, Oregon. They sent a note along with a great mug that they made. A peace rally. Join us September 11. That would be this Sunday. Surf, swim, sit, sing, speak. Unite at Sunset Beach at noon. Reclaim your right to free assembly, speech, speak for peace. Open mic, open heart. So Sunset Beach at 12 noon. For those folks who are inclined to get over to Oregon, or who may be listening on, I believe, KBBR is our affiliate in Coos Bay, Oregon. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bob in Clifton, Tennessee on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. Say, I've been thinking since 9/11, millions of dollars have been spent on exercises to prepare for evacuating cities in the event of a dirty bomb terrorist attack. It seems like that money was wasted and no lessons learned.
Well, this is the other big thing that the media is not talking about, and it surprises me, because this, in my mind, should be the number one question that everybody's asking. This levee breach could just as easily have been somebody setting off a car bomb or a truck bomb right up against a levee in New Orleans as it was a hurricane. I mean, it just as easily could have been. Now, the reason why the Bush administration and all the Republicans want to make sure that nobody is talking about that is because they want us to think that it was a hurricane that caused this damage, not the breach of the levees, not the flood. When, in fact, the damage from the hurricane was substantial, but we don't know how many people actually died because of the hurricane, you know, hit by blowing debris, shattered windows, blown out of their homes, you know, their car flipped over, whatever. But what we do know is that the vast majority of the deaths, I can't say we know it, but it certainly appears to be the case that the vast majority of the deaths came about as a result of the flood, and the flood was the result of the levee breach, and that was something that could have been prevented.
And it seems that, if I recall properly, in the Chicago exercise, communications between departments was one of the things that they were concentrating on.
Yeah, whereas in New Orleans, FEMA comes in and cuts the emergency lines to the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Department. I mean, go figure, to all of their emergency lines. It's incredible, Bob. I have, in the last 24 hours, I'll tell you, yesterday and the day before, I was saying, these guys are just incompetent. I am now of the opinion. Here's my official flip-flop, right? I have changed my opinion, which I guess shows that I'm a human being just like everybody else. I can learn and change my mind. I no longer think that this is simply the result of incompetence on the part of the Bush administration. I think this is criminal negligence. I think that this is the kind of thing. I mean, it's like if you're driving down the street and you're not paying attention to what's going on because you're having a swig out of a bottle, or you're talking on the cell phone, or you're talking to the person next to you, and you plow into somebody and kill them. If they can demonstrate that you weren't paying attention when you should have been, you can actually go to jail for that. That's called, you know, homicide. It's criminal negligence. And I think that the Bush administration is guilty of criminal negligence, manslaughter here. They are guilty of criminal negligence, and somebody should be held accountable for it. This is the kind of thing that you kill one person if you're driving your car, and, you know, you get a slap on the wrist or you go to jail. But the slap on the wrist actually only happened to Laura Bush when she was 17 years old, and she ran through a stop sign and hit a car and killed a young man who just happened to be her boyfriend, when Laura Bush killed her ex-boyfriend, of course, she was a teenager. They said, yeah, she was negligent, but let's give her a pass. But as adults, by and large, we're held accountable when we're criminally negligent. And this administration, I think, has crossed over into that realm. Sean in Atlanta, Georgia on the line. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Hey, Tom, yesterday you had mentioned the recruiting in the Astrodome.
Yeah, it appears that it wasn't actually happening in the Astrodome in a formal way, that what was going on was it was a few blocks down the street from the Astrodome, although there were reports of recruiters having come into the Astrodome.
Okay. Yeah, that one I wanted to be careful with, because to me that is totally appalling. The other thing is, you mentioned the spin machine and everything. What I don't get is, where are the Dems on this? I mean, there's basically now three instances, 9/11, the war, and now the hurricane, where there's pretty much factual gross negligence. Yet Where is it? Where are the Dems' voice on this?
Well, here's Nancy Pelosi speaking out quite outspoken.
He chose someone with absolutely no credentials. And you know what? When I said to the president that he should fire Michael Brown, he said, why would I do that? I said, because of all that went wrong, with all that didn't go right last week. And he said, what didn't go right? Oblivious. In denial.
Oblivious.
Dangerous.
In denial. Dangerous. And then of course, yesterday, we talked about, yesterday was Wednesday, wasn't it? Yesterday, we had the quote from Howard Dean. I mean, Howard Dean came out, and he was quite outspoken about this, very straightforward. Howard Dean said, hang on just a second, he said, based on today's reports, it seems clear that President Bush's visit today is just another callous political move crafted by Karl Rove. It's just appalling to see how quickly President Bush and Karl Rove have mobilized a political strategy in their own defense, but simply failed to mobilize a swift response to either keep the people in the Gulf Coast region safe in the first place or aid the victims in the aftermath of the storm. Thousands of people have lost their lives. Our nation faces difficult times as we address the painful aftermath of Katrina, yet President Bush is worried about shifting blame and passing the buck. Shouldn't he be worried about restoring stability, plans to evacuate survivors, and ensuring that our communities have the resources they need to help the victims of this tragedy rebuild their lives? Now is the time for leadership, not partisanship. This is one failure we will not allow Rove and the GOP attack machine to spin away with their usual barrage of photo ops, misinformation, smear campaigns, and press conferences. And I guarantee you, Sean, that statement was not carried on the national media.
Well, that's my next point. I was about to say, you know, I spend every night out there on Google and everything, and I didn't see Howard Dean or that anywhere.
He held
and
a press conference.
My concern is, one, I don't trust these guys to even give us an accurate body count. I think they're going to try to figure out a way to sweep that under the...
Being the Bush administration and FEMA?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
And then the other thing is what do I do to help make sure that we don't have them investigate themselves? Because we know we can't trust them there either.
Yeah, well, good luck on that. I mean, Bush has already said that he's going to investigate himself. He's going to investigate his own failings. He's going to investigate why he didn't respond. He's going to investigate why he went to Los Angeles and was playing the guitar. He's going to investigate why he went to Arizona and is having cake with Barry Goldwater while people are dying. He's going to investigate the whole thing. Don't you worry, Sean.
Yeah, well, that's what worries me.
Yeah, me too.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sean.
You're a ray of light.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the call. I mean, the bottom line is, as long as the Republicans are running the House and Senate, you're going to have corruption and you're going to have cover-ups. It's just that simple. And Nancy Pelosi, the House Democratic leader, comes out and calls George W. Bush. I mean, here she is. Here's this woman calling the president of the United States.
Oblivious, in denial, dangerous.
And it gets no national press. You've got Howard Dean saying in the national media, you've got Howard Dean calling a news conference and saying that this is one failure we will not allow Rove and the GOP attack machine to spin away with their usual barrage of photo ops, misinformation, smear campaign, and press conferences. And where is the corporate-owned press? Where is the American media? They're getting all ready for Bush's next trip down there. Oh, let's follow the president. Oh, boy, here goes the president. Yep, let's follow the president. Woof, woof. This is the tragedy of the media in the United States mark my word, this is leading to the destruction of democracy in the United States. Because Thomas Jefferson was absolutely right when he said, and I'll have to paraphrase him, I don't have the quote in front of me, but essentially, you can't have democracy without an educated populace, without a well-informed populace. I do remember one of his quotes verbatim. He said, if I had to choose between a government with no newspapers and newspapers with no government, I would surely choose the latter. Information is vital. And because of Ronald Reagan suspending the Sherman Antitrust Act and saying that news was no longer part of the community service that radio and television stations and newspapers have to pay back to their community, there's no longer an obligation, a legal obligation, to report on news. That was the biggest change, the Fairness Doctrine. It wasn't just that you no longer could only have one side of the story. It was that radio and television stations in particular, as in order to keep their licenses every year, had to perform community service, and that primary community service was not running the community swap meet or the hey, let's call in and I'd like to, I'm looking for a refrigerator, the community bulletin board. I mean, it's a marvelous thing, and local radio is great for doing that, but that wasn't the primary community service. The primary community service, everybody understood, was news. News operations lost money and did a good job. I was doing news back in the 1970s. I did news for 7 years in Lansing, Michigan. I was, for a while, I was a beat reporter. Every morning I'd go down and read the police blotter in Lansing. We'd go over to the mayor's office. We'd go across the street to the state capitol. We'd talk to the members of the House and Senate. We'd go to the governor's office, the attorney general's office, gather the news, go back to the station, record the spots and the actualities, play back the tapes, record the carts, and then we actually had 5-minute newscasts at the top of every hour. Why? Because that's what the station had to do to keep their license. This was a country and western music station. It was the number one station in town, but it was a music station. But they had good news. And I worked there and I did news, ended up, you know, being finally the anchor guy doing the news for 7 years. On and off right up to 1978, and they did that because that was the community. Then 78 comes along and Reagan says, you don't have to do that anymore. So what happens is all the news operations, and the networks used to provide good news, by the way, because they knew that their local affiliate TV stations and radio stations had to carry good news to satisfy their community service requirements, and good network news was part of that. And then Reagan came along and said, nope, don't have to do that anymore. And then Clinton nailed it, even worse, in 1996, signing the Telecommunications Act. And so what we have now is we have infotainment. We no longer have news. And the question for every news operation in the United States today is not, what is the truth? Instead, the question is, what will get the best ratings? If Michael Jackson gets good ratings and there are people dying in Darfur, Michael Jackson is what goes on TV. And it didn't used to be that way. Those of you who are old enough to remember, it didn't used to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way now, but you know, that's the legacy of the Reagan years. The disaster, frankly, of the Reagan years. Tom in Palm Springs, California. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, thank you. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
Listen, speaking of the news, the Karl Rove, I call it the fascist spin machine, is not allowing, they're calling for no photographs of dead bodies. Yet last night on the BBC World News, I counted four dead bodies that they showed. And in matter of fact, one of the reporters was asking the police and National Guards, how come you haven't removed this body? And they says, we don't have the time. And they says, and the reporter says, I've been walking by this body for 6 days now. Now, why aren't we seeing this on our news? Why are the American news not showing this? It's a pretty powerful thing when you show a dead body that's been lying on a street for a week in this country.
I'll tell you why you're not seeing it. You're not seeing it for the same reason that the week after George W. Bush was appointed president by the Supreme Court of the United States in 2001, that the week after that happened, there was a little story in the news about how CNN was sending one of their senior vice presidents to Washington, D.C. to assure the Bush administration that in the future they would get positive news coverage.
Right.
And it, because the bottom line is, when this administration says to a news organization, hey, CBS, we're no longer going to call on your reporters. We're no longer going to give you information feeds. You're no longer going to be able to travel on Air Force One. When they say that, that news organization is out of business.
Right.
And these guys are terrified of that because news is now a business.
And one other thing, where are the reporters demanding to know what the body counts are? I mean, I read in the paper today, 25,000 body bags have been sent down there, and yet they cannot give us a count. I mean, just from what I've been seeing on the news, there's got to be thousands of dead bodies.
Well, once again,
still not reporting.
I know, once again, let me tell you where those reporters are. If you work your way up in network news, you work your way up to the point where you're the White House correspondent, you got a job that pays somewhere between $150,000 and $500,000 a year in all probability. Would you put that kind of a job on the line by asking a hard question to the President of the United States? Well, you might or I might, but I can tell you, most of the members of the White House press corps won't. And the few who will, they never call on because they know who they are.
Yeah, I think they're going to wait. They're trying to postpone the body count until they could blame it back on the Democrats or the governor or somebody else. And I really think that that's what's happening. They don't want to give us the true facts until they could maybe dissuade the public from thinking that this is the
Oh, that's right. And plus, once they've got some aid in there, then they're going to be strutting around going, hey, here's some relief. Here, have some food. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Jay in Atlanta on the line. Hey, Jay, what's on your mind today?
Regarding what you said a little while ago about the gross criminal negligence and how, you know, you even prefaced it by saying, you know, I wasn't of that mind frame yesterday, but, you know, you can't deny it. I'm looking at internets and email Yahoo groups yesterday. I think you probably know there's a strong sentiment out there, a very wide sentiment that even, like, some conservatives and Michael Savage and whatnot, that not only is it what you just said, but they even are very strongly believe that it was deliberate. So my bigger point is, even if it's not deliberate, just they were, like, drinking behind the wheel. Don't we have to address the severe leadership vacuum that we're looking facing?
Yeah, I mean, the best case scenario is that they deliberately put the guy who's in charge of the International Arabian Horse Owners Association in charge of FEMA, and his
right.
two senior deputies are Bush's former events planner and Bush's former communications advisor down in Texas. I mean, that was intentional, and it's just like if
right.
you decide to get drunk before you go out and kill somebody with your car, that is determined to be intentional. So, yeah, I'm right there with you, Jay. This is a crime. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Lather was 30 years old today. They took away all of his toys.
Quote from Governor Bush, presidential debate, October 3rd, 2000. I have to pay the administration a compliment. James Lee Witt of FEMA has done a really good job of working with governors during times of crisis. But that's the time when you're tested not only, it's the time to test your mettle, a time to test your heart when you see people whose lives have been turned upside down. It broke my heart to go down to the flood scene in Del Rio where a fellow and his family got completely uprooted. The only thing I knew to do was to get aid as quickly as possible with state and federal help and to put my arms around the man and his family and cry with him. That's what governors do.
Drawing pictures of mountains that look like bumps and thrashing with his hands.
And apparently that's what presidents do, too. They just put their arms around people and hug them when the cameras are rolling and then go away. And that's the end of that. All right, 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Charles in Waco, Texas. Hey, Charles.
Nice talking to you.
Thank
you. You know what? I'm wondering if...
Planet that way? I don't think so. No,
well,
I think this is criminal negligence.
Yeah, they let it happen because they figured this was going to be a nice land grab on for their part. Look what happened to Biloxi. I mean, I remember going there a while back, and there were no casinos. I went there a couple of years ago, and the whole beachfront is covered with casinos.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm imagining the same thing's going to happen down there now. Corporate America is going to take over all that land, and, hey, they got all the people out of there. Nobody's...
Immediate impulse, his first instinct was to lie. Oh, we could never have imagined this. Using the Condi lie, right? Who could have imagined they'd use airplanes as missiles? Well, they just tried to do that a few months earlier in Europe when George Bush had to flee a city and go sleep on an aircraft carrier because Osama bin Laden was going to hijack commercial planes. Oh, we never could have imagined. We never could have imagined that the levees would breach.
Right. You have been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio, on RadioPower.org, Live365, WhiteRoseSociety.org, CRN Digital, and podcasting on Apple iTunes. Welcome back to our program. Dave in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, one thing I just got through listening to Jim Hightower. Thank you for having him on, his theory on teaching unintelligent design. But I'm saying that the severity of the character disorder of this little clique we have, this little cartel in our White House.
Now, Dave, let me interrupt you for a moment. You're a clinical psychologist. Are you speaking as a psychologist or as just an average guy?
Well, no, I am a psychologist, and I would say that the diagnosis psychopathic is one that I would apply to these. I've also spent many, many years working inside the California penal system. But I've seen people that rig elections, that steal elections by fraud. That's a kind of a character disorder. I say people that invade foreign countries for political advantage or for profit, that's a kind of a severe character disorder type of people that do that sort of thing. To me, the evidence that they orchestrated 9/11 is overwhelming. So there's a consistent pattern. Now, I believe that their conduct in New Orleans is consistent with that pattern. They not only were negligent, they actively obstructed aid that was trying to come around them to get to these people. They sent them back. Their plan was to stand down and let nature take its course and deal with any number of poor voters, poor black Democratic voters. I believe that
it's a strong indictment, Dave. And as I said, I'm not willing to go to the place where I think that there was any intention here. I think that there was mind-boggling incompetence. You put in charge of, and thank you for the call and for sharing that was, you put in charge of FEMA a guy whose former job, his biggest prosecution as head of the International Arabian Horse Owners Association, was busting a guy who had liposuction on the butt of a horse. And you put him in charge of FEMA because he happens to be a political flack for the president. And then he appoints as his number two guy another GOP operative who was GOP in Oklahoma and was his college roommate. And then that guy appoints as the number three guy in FEMA, who is now the number two guy in FEMA, the guy who was the event planner for the Bush campaign in 2000. And then they appoint as the number three guy in FEMA the guy who was the state of Texas communications manager for the Bush administration, for the Bush campaign. None of them with any experience in dealing with disasters. And you get a predictable response, in my opinion. Scott in San Diego, California. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Tom. I think this Hurricane Katrina, the result of the follow-up with the federal government, shows that George Bush's policies for both domestic terrorism and his homeland security are completely fraudulent.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, it raises, and thank you, Scott, for that, it raises the question, what if this had been a terrorist who simply set off a couple of truck bombs along the levee? You'd have the exact same results, because it wasn't the hurricane that killed all these people, it was the flood. And it was the flood because of the levee failure. And what the Bush administration has shown is that they do not have the ability to deal with a disaster, whether it's natural or whether it was man-made. Ed in San Juan, California. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Tom. 2 points. First of all, Barbara Bush did say that when he flew over, the people did enjoy that, didn't she?
She wasn't flying over. She was in the Houston
Astrodome.
No, not her. But
her son flew over.
Yeah,
and
well,
the people enjoyed that.
No, well, I don't know about that, but in the Astrodome, she said, well, they're all underprivileged anyway, so this is working out very well. Well, here's Barbara. We'll let her speak for herself.
And so many of the people in the arenas here, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
It's working very well.
And I need to point out one other thing. 2 weeks ago, you had a gentleman from Ignorant Rand on your program who told us about the lower animals in this world don't deserve anything because they don't respect property rights. Are you still there?
I am.
And I'm going to refer you to Howard Zinn and a few people who, when the Euro-Americans, now Euro-Americans, came over here, the lower animals were the natives.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And you're seeing the same identical thing. And I'm saying, don't cut me off because I know the last guy, you don't want to hear that. But it's
I don't want to hear it?
That's the way we treat the low-class people.
No, I am agreeing with you,
we don't respect property rights.
I am agreeing with you, Ed. In fact, the thing that horrified me was Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson on his own program, he had Jesse Jackson on there. This was 4 or 5 days ago. He had Jesse Jackson on there, and Jesse Jackson is going off on this thing about, you know, if this had been a white community, they would have had, you know, cruise ships, and they would have booked every hotel room within 1,000 miles, and these people would be, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And Tucker Carlson was saying, and I think with some accuracy, this is more about class than about race. And then Tucker Carlson goes into this weird rant where he says, and everybody knows that in America, those people who are of the higher classes, the higher socioeconomic classes, who have more money, they get better services, they get better health care, they get better taken care of, they're the first in line, and that's simply the way it is. And he just stopped at that point as if to say, and that's how it should be. And, Ed, that's where...
You see where Ian Rand come in, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
this is the whole objectivist philosophy. Ed, thanks for the call. Okay, I'm not disagreeing with you. O'Neill Dozier's with us. O'Neill Dozier is an attorney, an ordained minister, a professional football player with the Chicago Bears. And, sir, I understand you think that the separation between church and state is a bad thing?
Yeah, certainly it's a bad thing, Tom.
Why should I have a government which has the force of guns telling me whether or not I should worship and whom I should worship?
No, they're not saying that you should worship. You have the option, Tom, to worship anyone or anything you want to worship.
Well, how do I have an option if the government is in the business of religion?
Well, first of all, let me just say this. It was not the intention of the framers of the Constitution to restrict anyone's religious belief of freedom of speech.
No, quite the contrary. They were all in favor of freedom of religion and freedom of speech. However, the big debate between Jefferson and Madison, and I'm sure if you're a student of this, you're familiar with this, because there's no shortage of you know, the letters between them and quotes and speeches.
Yeah.
Jefferson was worried that if the religious folks ever got into power in government, advancing a religious agenda, that it would mean the end of the republic because we would degenerate into a theocracy. Madison didn't think that was possible. He didn't think the Americans would tolerate it. Madison's concern, and the reason why, as president, James Madison in 1812 exercised his first presidential veto to veto a bill to give money to churches in Washington, D.C. to care for the poor, was that if government started giving money to churches, it would corrupt the churches. Here we have, in the last year, for example, the election year, 2004, the Bush administration, not by an act of Congress, but by the pen stroke of George W. Bush, going around Congress, creating his Office of Faith-Based Initiatives, passed out $1 billion to churches. By the way, O'Neill Dozier, did you get any of that money?
No, I have not gotten any. But now, it just didn't go to churches. It went to synagogues. It went to various religious organizations. And
you don't think that has a corrupting influence?
Oh, certainly not. Certainly not at all. The people in churches, and these people pay taxes also, Tom.
No, actually, they don't. They don't. Churches do not pay taxes.
No, I said the people in the churches. They pay taxes also. I didn't say the church pay taxes.
So you're telling me that if I give you $1 million, it's not going to change your behavior?
Certainly not.
It wouldn't. If I said, O'Neill, I'm going to give you $1 million. By the way, I'd like to talk to you about the fact that...
You know what it'd help? You know what it'd do for the church?
What's that?
It would help the church create more opportunities for the people that are hurting. You see? The churches have been doing the work all the while.
So let me get this straight. You're suggesting that if we, the people collectively, which includes people who are not Christians, people mm-hmm. who are not Jewish, people who are even atheists, mm-hmm. if we, the people collectively, decide that we want to take care of folks who have, for example, just been wiped out by a hurricane, that rather than taking our tax dollars and saying, okay, here, we're going to put together a shelter for you guys, that instead we should give that money to somebody like Pat Robertson, who will then build a shelter and take care of those people. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, Pat Robertson has been doing it all the while.
So you're suggesting that we should be giving the tax dollars to churches and let them do it?
I think it should be given to faith-based religious organizations.
Why?
Simply because of the fact that the churches have established the fact, Tom, that they have always done the work. They have been out in the trenches. They have done the work. They have worked with the alcoholics, the drug users. and all the people that are hurting.
O'Neill Dozier.
No one does that.
AA is not a religious organization. It's not a church.
But no one does that.
AA is the largest organization in the nation to deal with alcoholics. It's not a church. The FEMA is the largest organization dealing with disasters. It's not a church.
Let me ask you this, Tom. Why are you so afraid of that?
Because I am a Christian, and I don't want my church to be corrupted by Caesar coming along and giving us cash, and then all of a sudden we're sitting around going, okay, let's see, 10% of our budget last year came from the federal government, or 20 or 30% of our budget, and if we take a position that we consider a moral position, let's say that we're opposed to the war in Iraq, we will lose that money. So maybe we should just keep our mouths shut.
Well, the thing that I say is this, and that is that this is a godly nation, and this nation was founded.
We're talking about the government, O'Neill. We're not talking about the nation.
It was founded on the principles of Christianity.
Actually, it was not.
Okay. It was founded on the principle of Christianity.
Actually, it was not. I'm sorry.
It was. I can show you documents on that.
It absolutely was not. In fact, the framers, there are Ten Commandments. There are only two that we built into law. Don't steal, don't kill. There is no law that says that you can't dishonor your parents.
No,
there is no law that says you must...
Do not commit adultery either.
Okay, so arguably three. But no, I'm sorry, it was not the case. In fact, to quote Thomas Jefferson in a January 24th, 1814 letter that he sent to John Adams, he said, "It is not only the sacred volumes that the churches have thus interpolated, gutted, and falsified, but the works of others relating to them and even the laws of the land. Our judges, too, have lent a ready hand to further these frauds and have been willing to lay the yoke of their own opinions on the necks of others, to extend the coercions of municipal law to the dogmas of their religion by declaring that these make a part of the law of the land."
Thomas Jefferson himself gave monies to churches.
Yeah, giving money to churches is one thing. Saying that the state...
Thomas Jefferson led missions. Thomas Jefferson used tax dollars to lead missions. The biggest church service during Thomas Jefferson's era as president was held right there in the White House. That was the biggest church service on Sundays.
Here is a February 10, 1814 letter to Dr. Thomas Cooper from Thomas Jefferson. "Finally, in answer to Fortescue Allen's question about why the Ten Commandments should not now be considered part of the common law of England and of American law, we may say they are not because they never were. Anybody who asserts that the Ten Commandments are the basis for American, British, or British law is manifestly believing a document that is mistakenly believing a document that is a manifest forgery. Sir Matthew Hale lays it down in these words: Christianity is part of the laws of England, but it is not true. We might as well say that the Newtonian system of philosophy is a part of the common law." I'm still reading from Thomas Jefferson, "as that the Christian religion is. In truth," he says, "the alliance between church and state in England has ever made their judges accomplices in the frauds of the clergy." Stick around, O'Neill. We'll continue this conversation.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
So just because he wasn't really elected, just because that ballot count wasn't fair.
And welcome back, my friends.
Just because him and all his friends are millionaires, don't care.
And welcome back. We're talking with O'Neill Dozier. O'Neill Dozier is an attorney, an ordained minister, former professional football player with the Chicago Bears. O'Neill, you were saying...
Yes, let me just bring out two things to you, Tom. Number one, when you go back and we talk about the letter that was written to the Danbury Baptist Association, we must point
by whom?
Out two things here.
By whom? Letter from whom?
By Jefferson.
Okay.
Okay. We must point out two things here, and that is that association was anti-federalist, and so was the president at the time.
And throughout his life.
Jefferson, yes, yeah. right. So therefore, now this was the purpose of the Constitution. He believed the way the Constitution believed, okay?
The purpose of the Constitution was to establish civil, that is, secular governance in the United States, period.
But the Constitution, the First Amendment in the Constitution, had been enacted to prevent the federal establishment of a national denomination.
Let me. In fact, speaking directly to that, you know, there's this famous.
That was the purpose. It was. That is what it is saying in the First Amendment. There's nothing written in the First Amendment that says that there should be a separation of church and state.
Well, those words don't appear. Certainly, those words were used by both Jefferson and Madison after the fact. But here, this famous quote of Jefferson's that folks on the religious right love to quote: "I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny imposed upon the mind of man." Mm-hmm. Do you know the letter that came out of the context of that? This was a letter in 1800. It was 2 months before Thomas Jefferson was elected president. The election campaign was swirling around him hot and heavy. He wrote a letter to one of his three closest friends in the world, Benjamin Rush, who, by the way, was a deist. He was not a Christian, as was Jefferson, a deist. And he says, "Dear sir, I promised you a letter on Christianity, which I have not forgotten. I do not know that it would reconcile the genus irritable vatum," which is Latin for angry priests, "who are all in arms against me. Their hostility is on too interesting a ground to be suffered, to be softened. The delusion on the clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution, which, while it secured the freedom of the press, covered also the freedom of religion, has given to the clergy of America a very favorable hope of obtaining an establishment of a particular form of Christianity throughout the United States. And as every sect believes its own form to be the true one, everyone perhaps hoped for his own, but especially the Episcopalians and Congregationalists. The returning good sense of our country threatens abortion to their hopes, and the preachers believe that any portion of power confided in me, such as being elected president, will be exerted in opposition to their schemes. And they believe rightly, for I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. But this is all they have to fear from me, but it is enough, too, in their opinion."
Well, I hear what you're saying, but still, again, we get back to the fact...
No, I'm not saying it. Jefferson said it.
Right. You know, but we have to get back to the fact that the Constitution is the law of the land.
And the Constitution in...
And there is no place, Tom, in the First Amendment, not even impliedly states, that there is a separation of church and state. And we have to go by the Constitution. Is that right?
There's
nothing there impliedly stating that there is a separation of church and
state. Then why is it that James Madison vetoed on February 21st, 1811, a law? His veto notice said very clearly, very explicitly, that he was, because the bill vests and said incorporated church. Well, we're out of time here, O'Neill. O'Neill, it's been a great conversation. I suspect we're not going to change each other's minds, but I respect you for coming on the air and talking with me
about
it. But
now, you know, we didn't get into all the good stuff, all this thing about bashing Bush.
Okay, well, we'll have to do that again.
The black people being killed by him and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay, we'll do that another time. Thank you, O'Neill.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Thomas Jefferson, you know, he actually rewrote the New Testament. It's still in print. It's called the Jefferson Bible. He was a great student of the Bible. And in Thomas Jefferson's personal diary, presumably never intended to be published. In fact, to the best of my knowledge, the only time it was published, I may be wrong on this, but the copy that I have was published in 1904 by the Thomas Jefferson Association, which I don't believe is in business any longer, and it's a 20-volume collection of everything he ever wrote. I used it as a source material for the book I wrote, What Would Jefferson Do? And to the best of my knowledge, this has never been published anywhere either, but it's there. You can find it. There are, you know, there are versions of it now on the web, electronic versions of the 20-volume collected set of his writings. His personal diary entry for February 1, 1799, and I quote from Thomas Jefferson, "When the clergy addressed George Washington on his departure from the government, it was observed in their consultation that he had never, on any occasion, said a word to the public which showed a belief in the Christian religion. And they thought they should so pen their address," that is their letter to him, in which they were asking him or telling him what they wanted him to talk about when he said his farewell address, "that they should so pen their address as to force him at length to declare publicly whether he was a Christian or not." They did so. They wrote that. "However," Jefferson noted in his diary, "the old fox was too cunning for them. He answered every article of their address, particularly except that which he passed over without notice. Washington never did say a word on the subject in any of his public papers, except in his valedictory letter to the governors of the states, when he resigned his commission in the army, wherein he speaks of the benign influence of the Christian religion." I'm still quoting Thomas Jefferson. "I know that Governor Morris, who pretended to be in his secrets, in Washington's confidence, and believed himself to be so, has often told me that General Washington believed no more in that Christian system than he himself did." End of quote. Governor Morris was also a deist, not a Christian. And in fact, George Washington helped work out the treaty with Tripoli, signed into law by John Adams a year after Washington left the presidency, 1797, that opens, "As the government of the United States is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion, as it has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of the Muslims, and as the said states have never entered into any war or act of hostility against any Mohammedan nation, it is declared by the parties that no pretext arising from religious opinions shall ever produce an interruption of the harmony existing between the two countries." End of quote. And as I said to O'Neill, speaking as a Christian, I am offended. I agree both with Jefferson and Madison. Both of them were convinced the other was wrong. Madison was convinced that if government ever started giving churches money, you would see the corruption of churches, and you would see churchgoers, church members, people participating, particularly at the highest levels of religion, people, multimillionaires like Pat Robertson, billionaires like Pat Robertson, multimillionaires like Jerry Falwell, out flacking, you know, flogging the talk show circuit and going on talk radio, saying we need more government money, more government money, more government money, and not criticizing the government in power. They would be corrupted by that. And, you know, Jefferson really didn't think that would happen. He figured that everybody would see through that. He thought that if any church took money from the government, nobody would ever believe in that church again. But Jefferson's fear was that if religious people gained power in government and allowed their religion to influence their decisions in government, that we would then devolve into a theocracy. We would become like the Taliban. And Madison thought, nah, that's never going to happen. The American people wouldn't allow that. They're not that stupid. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom in Minnesota, on the line. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I wanted to speak to that guy. You know, these type of guys that spread these lies about the founders being Christians, you know, they're never challenged on mainstream
media. Well, many of the founders were Christians. John Adams, for example, was outspokenly Christian. In fact, when John Adams edited the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson wrote it, and Thomas Jefferson talked in the opening of the Declaration of Independence about nature's God. And yep. John Adams said, no, that should be the Christian God. And they had a big fight about that, and Ben Franklin mediated the fight. Franklin and Adams helped edit the, along with John Jay a little bit, helped edit the Declaration of Independence. And Ben Franklin, who in his autobiography Toward the Mystery wrote, and I quote, "I have found Christian dogma unintelligible. Early in my life, I absented myself from Christian assemblies," end quote. Ben Franklin, who was definitely not a Christian, agreed right with Thomas Jefferson and said, no, leave it nature's God. And so that's why we have nature's God in the Declaration of Independence.
But this also comes from Thomas Paine, who was one of the great founders and wrote the book Age of Reason. You
yes.
know this. And
yes.
he criticized Christianity. And Thomas Jefferson was influenced by Paine's common sense in the Declaration of Independence.
To some extent. Actually, well, yeah. Okay. Okay, yes, to some
Well, extent. These guys, I mean, these journalists never challenge these claims on mainstream media. Either the journalists are not versed in U.S.
They don't
history.
Know. They don't know. They
or they're just scared.
Maybe no, well, I think it's that they just don't know. And you've got folks out there who are literally rewriting history.
Exactly.
I mean, they are rewriting history, and in many cases, they're just making it up. There's this guy who's down in Texas who's got this big website, and he just, like, makes up quotes from the founders that are actually quoted in textbooks.
Yeah, I know. The only guy besides you in media is Bill Maher, who, you know, it's his mission to...
Well, and Bill Maher's an atheist, and I'm not. And
Well, actually, he says he's agnostic, doesn't he?
Yeah, whatever. You know, he's
well,
not...
that's a little different.
I understand. I understand. Yeah. I'll acknowledge that, yes. I don't know which he says he is, but in any case,
One quickie point here. I'm sure you're going to cover the Roberts nomination, maybe.
Yeah,
we
have been on an ongoing basis here.
Just
and there.
To recommend to you and your listeners a great essay in Harper's Magazine. This September issue by Professor Cass Sunstein. He's a University of Chicago professor. It's a brilliant article on the right-wing transformation of the Constitution through these radicals. And he wrote a book called Radicals in Robes.
Okay.
It's a great
essay. It's about the Federalist Society, I assume.
No, this guy's a liberal.
No, I mean, it's about the Federalist Society. The Federalist Society is the animating force behind the transformation of our courts.
He covers that, but he goes through the whole history, you know, of the court. It's like a 9-page essay in the magazine.
Huh,
I recommend it to, you know, look that over before you cover this Roberts thing.
Cool. Okay, I'll do it. Tom, thanks a lot for the call.
Bye.
Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Ronald in Bennington, Vermont on the line. Hey, Ronald, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind, Ronald?
I was telling you about your guest, O'Neill. I mean, I'm strongly in support of the separation of church and state, and I was wondering when Mr. O'Neill was defending Pat Robertson, if he knows of Pat Robertson's statement about assassinating the president of Venezuela.
I'm sure he does, and he probably even knows that Pat Robertson owns diamond mines in Africa where he's getting blood money from that nation. That's why I asked O'Neill Dozier, you know, are you getting any money from these faith-based initiatives of the president? And he said, no, I believe him. I don't get it why he would be going around saying we should be getting more money from the government. It's really a wrong to all of us for two reasons. The first is we decided some time back that there are some things that are so essential to life in America that we're going to actually subsidize them. That hospitals, for example, nonprofit hospitals, that education, nonprofit schools, that communities for abused kids, nonprofit child care organizations, that churches, that religion, that these all deal with the most visceral and essential elements of humanity, the things that make us human. And so we're going to say, we'll pick up the tab for your police protection. We'll pick up the tab for your fire department protection. We'll pick up the tab for the public roads that give you access to the rest of us. We'll pick up the tab for the educated workforce that you're going to hire. We're going to pick up the tab for all that stuff. You don't have to pay any taxes at all. And now these groups, these religious groups, for whom we are paying their share of the cost of the commons, they're coming to us and they're saying, oh, by the way, of those taxes that you're paying, we would like some of your tax dollars to simply be given to us as grants. And George Bush gave them $1,000 million just last year, $1 billion. This is wrong.
I agree. And, of course, he was repaid by their vote.
Yeah. I mean, that's
kind of like a trade-off.
Yeah, that's why he did it. That's absolutely why he did it.
It's been getting awful on this, I guess, ever since Ronald Reagan, and certainly over the last 20 years. I mean, religious organizations have become so political and, you know, practically, because I go to church myself, and some churches I've been to practically tell you who to vote for.
Yeah, and this is just absolutely wrong. And, in fact, the deal that we made with the churches when we said, okay, we're not going to tax you anymore. We're going to give you an exemption on all these taxes. In exchange for that, you can't participate in politics because you could use then politics to get even more of our money. And we're not going to allow you to have that influence on politics. And the churches all said, fine, we will stick to religion. In fact, in the Christian churches said, in our religion, there's this little story about this guy who brings a coin to Jesus and says, should I pay my taxes with this? And Jesus says, whose picture's on the coin? And the guy says, Caesar. And Jesus says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God which is God's. And for most Christians, that has defined the separation of church and state, not the Constitution. Christianity itself defined it. But, Ronald, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Tom.
Good to hear from you. You too. I appreciate it. Lynn in Eureka, California. Hey, Lynn, what's up?
Well,
I guess I'm joining the crowd here and talking about your Christian caller. My Christian credentials are as good as anyone's. I walk the walk right along with them. I talk the same talk. I go to the same churches. I believe many of the same things, but I do believe that if we give out that aid to people needs to be more coordinated than just handing a few coins out to this church and a few coins out to that other church and let them do what they want with it. The government can coordinate this much better than individuals.
Well, and to bring this back around to today, if you go to the FEMA website and you click on, you know, contribute money, you're going to get a page which up until yesterday had Pat Robertson right up at the top of it as one of the top three listings, Pat Robertson's Operation Blessing. But you're going to get a page that is, by and large, religious organizations.
Right.
This is government supporting religious organizations.
Well,
now, I have no problem with the religious organizations doing good, but I do have a problem with the force and power and wealth of government being used to promote it.
I absolutely agree with that. That's also wrong. That will mislead the churches down the, you know, some primrose path.
It already
is. I also think that they just don't have, they're not the same, they don't have the same scope. They can't handle as large of problems, to me.
Yeah.
That's the way it seems to me.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Lynn, thank you very much for the call. Good
you
to
bet.
Hear from you. I appreciate
Bye.
It. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Jim in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Tom. One more comment about church and state?
Sure, that's fine.
Well, to say, just because those five words, per se, don't appear in the Constitution or First Amendment, to say that that's not implied is just ridiculous.
Sure.
I'll give you a
pillow. But my the bigger point that I should have made with Dozier and O'Neill Dozier and I never did was that Jesus was the one who came up with the idea of the separation of church and state, not Jefferson.
Mm-hmm. Well, the example I always use is nowhere in the Constitution or in any of the amendments does it say one man, one vote. But that's clearly implied, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, I would say the 14th Amendment at the very least suggests one man, one vote. But you
it
know,
suggests it, maybe.
It talks about apportionment. Of voters.
Words don't appear in the Constitution.
No, that phrase doesn't appear. You're right. You're right,
no.
Jim.
No.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are just common sense. Just
plain
old, good old-fashioned common sense. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Tom. You know, that Operations Blessings, which was the right under the Red Cross, is the second charity listed until someone figured out what was going on. During the Rwandan crisis, some official in Virginia, they did an investigation, found out 95% of the money funneled through Operation Blessing actually went to a company where Robertson was the major stockholder that owned these diamond mine interests in Africa.
Yeah.
And it's just, you
well,
know.
Well, I don't know about the percentage, but that certainly was well documented, that the Operation Blessing planes were being used to ferry diamond mine folks all around Africa. Yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, so how can, it's just insanity to have this, you can't just.
No, it's not insanity, Glenn. What it is it's the corrupt old boy crony network that we're seeing with the Bush administration just absolutely hugely writ large extending into the realm of religion.
And they continue to lie about it. You know, this thing about not declaring a federal emergency on August 28th. You know, I have somewhere on the web, my wife brought it home, is the actual letter written to the president by the governor of Louisiana through the regional director asking it to be taken over by the federal.
Oh, yeah.
And
George Bush on Sunday took it over, declared that it was a federal emergency. The problem is that the Washington Post wrote Wednesday or Thursday or Friday last week, ran an article saying that that a senior administration official said that the problem was that Kathy Blanco, the governor of Louisiana, had not asked for that declaration of emergency assistance until Wednesday. It was a lie. And in all probability, that senior administration official was Karl Rove. Within a few hours, the Washington Post issued a correction. But right-wing talk show hosts are still quoting that original lie in the Washington Post. Jim, thanks for the, Glenn, thanks for the call. Billy in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Billy, we've got about a minute left. What's up?
Hey, you know, just think about it. God's got his own hit team. You got Pat Robertson, you know, killing Supreme Court justices. Ayatollah Khomeini putting hits out on authors.
Yep.
You name it. You can find a few religious people who want to see people dead. But here's why I called. I don't understand why we keep talking about what the founding fathers wanted or what the Jesus had to say. How about we act like modern, intelligent men and ask ourselves,
what's best for us?
What's good? Give me three examples of where state and religion mixing are good. I'll give you 80 where they don't work.
Yeah, good point. Thank you.
You're welcome.
As so often the case, you get right to the issue. And Billy, thank you for the call. You are absolutely succinct. I mean, do we want the Taliban in the United States? Is that what we're all about? Do we want a new Taliban? Do we want a new, you know, amalgamation of church and state? Somehow I think not. Or, on the other hand, do we want to be like Saudi Arabia, where you don't have the Taliban running the country? Instead, you got the country giving all his money to the Wahhabists, and they're running the schools, and they're exporting a religion that says, if you commit suicide while you're killing infidels, all the better. I don't think we want that either.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 55 and a half minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. Our number 1-866-889-8894 and Diane in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Diane.
Hi, Tom. I know you talked about this last hour, but I really wanted to say something about FEMA.
Sure.
I know you talked about it in terms of negligence and manslaughter, but I think one can make a good case that this is deliberate, not de facto. You know, we all heard about trucks with supplies not being allowed in the city by FEMA,
right.
Fuel not allowed off the Coast Guard tanker by FEMA,
yep.
Volunteers, including the Red Cross, not allowed in, communication lines cut by FEMA.
Do you think, though, that that was deliberately done at the highest levels? I mean, do you really think,
yes,
that the Bush administration sat around and said, let's just screw these people in New Orleans?
I do.
Why?
Because
they're paying a terrible political price for it.
Well, let me tell you, the price, I actually heard on NPR, this is NPR, some officials from Biloxi.
Which is rapidly, by the way, becoming National Republican Radio. I'm serious. You've got Republicans in charge of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting now.
We used to call NPR National Petroleum Radio.
Yeah, well, there you go. In any case, as you were saying.
But anyway, saying, well, this could be very fortuitous because the hotels and casinos had nowhere to expand to, and now they have all this area.
Right.
But what I really wanted to talk to you about is I go to rainbow gatherings, or did more in my youth than I do now, and the rainbow family is pretty much a bunch of hippies that have these conventions.
I'm familiar, yeah.
Pray for peace on the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And FEMA has been harassing the rainbow gatherings for years, spending millions harassing. I once asked the rainbow lawyer how much money FEMA has spent on us, and he said it's incalculable. The hearings and the harassment and the spying and the lying and going to the areas we're going to go in and putting out disinformation is just...
So you see, Diane, FEMA as an actual malevolent force within,
yes,
the United States.
Yes, because I've seen it for years. And I'm sure we could document this because they've been...
I'd love to see that documentation. I'd love to see it.
It should be able to be found, but I do see it as a mullet. There's no other explanation.
Yeah, well, I know there are entire websites out there devoted to the FEMA relocation camps, which are supposed to be for, you know, evacuations of disaster victims, and saying, this is for when they take over America. These are going to be the concentration camps.
Right. When FEMA puts out this swill, I think it's deliberate.
Yeah, well, interesting. I hope you're wrong, Diane. I hope, you know, for American democracy, I hope you're wrong, but it's scary news. And I look forward, my email, tom@tomhartman.com. Send me anything you've got on that. I'd love to see it, about FEMA and the Rainbow Gathering. tom@tomhartman, HARTMANN.com. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to Pennsylvania, on Sirius Satellite Radio, on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, podcast around the world on Apple iTunes. Welcome back to our program. A lot in the news today, a lot we've been talking about. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. In just a minute, we're going to be talking with Norman Solomon. First, just to wrap up a little business from the previous hour, Bob in Indianapolis. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Bob?
Yeah, I want to talk about Leo Strauss's book, or the Leo Strauss and the American Right Drury's book.
Yeah, the one that was my BuzzFlash book of the month last month.
Yes, and that's exactly where I got it from, was from BuzzFlash and your recommendation. I try to read most of your recommendations. I'd like to suggest you or some other author that perhaps you could find write a more readable version of it. I consider myself to be pretty bright and borderline intellectual, and it's really a tough read. I completely agree with it, but it needs to be
readable
form.
Yeah, I noted that in the book review.
Folks.
Yeah, I noted that in the book review that she's a professor and she writes it like a college textbook, and it's unfortunate, but it is the best book out there that summarizes what's up with Leo Strauss. But point well taken, Bob, and maybe somebody who's a brilliant writer like Norman Solomon will go after it, hopefully. Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind?
The FEMA give-out on debit cards. You know, I'm all for helping the people down there, but for FEMA to come out and give $2,000 debit cards out to people they don't even know who they put on buses, where they sent them, where they're going, how are they going to get these debit cards to the people that are supposed to have them?
I don't know, but I frankly would rather, what is the famous quote from Franklin Roosevelt? I believe it was from his inaugural speech on July 27th in 1936 in Philadelphia, where he said, "Better." I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact quote, but something to the effect of, better to have a government that occasionally errs on the side of charity than a government frozen in the ice of its own indifference.
Yeah, but when you look at it, you know, the bureaucrats are going to get most of them debit cards stuck in their pocket.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well,
I do.
We have strong. And, yeah, well, I respect.
One other thing about down there. Are they going to bulldoze these houses up, burn them, which is the most sanitary way to go if they do anything, and then under eminent domain, take all that property and let this be for the rich down there?
That's my prediction. That's my prediction, Jim. I see Disneyland coming to New Orleans. It's going to be the new Orleans, the sanitized New Orleans, the right-wing Christian version of New Orleans, if you will. Rick in Grand Rapids. Hey, Rick.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on the church-state separation of those two.
Yes, very, very quickly. I want to get to Norman here.
Okay, fine. Well, just basically this. If you look at any country in the world that's ever been a theocracy, and right now I guess Iran would be the closest thing, you look at what a miserable place that is, although changing. And secondly, when you talk about separation of church and state, of course, it's allowed, as you said, the churches to not pay taxes, and they're not rendering to Caesar. And now it seems they not only don't want to pay taxes to the government, now they want to get money from them in the form of faith-based initiatives.
Yeah.
I don't think that's very religious at all. I think that's just wanting to, you know, to be either a freeloader or actually being on the take.
Yeah, it's just plain old flat-out wrong. I mean, that's the bottom line. Norman Solomon is with us. Hey, Norman.
Hi, good being with you.
Good to have you with us. You are one of the great writers on the American scene today. I always love reading your stuff.
Thank you.
And you are now suggesting, and I absolutely agree with it, but you just said it in such a great way. You said, we should force a genuine national debate on whether George W. Bush and Dick Cheney are fit to be president and vice president of the United States.
Yes, well, there is such a thing as criminal neglect. I'll leave it to the lawyers as to whether that qualifies as high crimes and misdemeanors. I suspect that it well should. And we have the reality of people's minds are blown by just the extent of deadly irresponsibility that came out of the White House and their actions and inactions, you know, in connection with this hurricane. Where's the accountability? You know, I hear people from left, right, and center, they use phrases like, where does the buck stop? It stops with the president. And yet, here we are where the talking heads in Washington who are on the major, huge networks, they don't seem to be broaching this topic. I think it's time for a real debate.
I don't disagree with you, but here we have an administration that before 9/11 was fiddling. I mean, you know, Bush had 56 specific individual warnings that 9/11 was going to happen in all kinds of different ways and did nothing. I mean, Richard Clark running around with his hair on fire. George W. Bush goes off and to vacation, you know, and is clearing brush. So we've got that failure. You've got the anthrax attacks, another death of Americans on American soil. We have no clue who did that, although it was very convenient that the two leaders in the United States Senate, the two Democratic leaders in the United States Senate who could have stopped the Patriot Act as that legislation was going through, Tom Daschle and Pat Leahy, were the only two people, Pat Leahy, the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Tom Daschle, the leader of the Senate Democrats, who then controlled the Senate because of Jim Jeffers' defections. They were the only two people who got anthrax in the mail in the Senate. That crime has never been resolved. And now we have, then you have the crime in Iraq, the death of thousands of Americans as a result of lies that this administration has told. I mean, not only have they gotten a pass on all three of these things, but I would say that probably somewhere between a quarter and a third, and maybe even coming up on a half of Americans, think that they've done very well on those three things.
Well, absolutely. And this is all in the context of a war that anybody who's been paying attention knows was based on deception from beginning to end. I think that we are encouraged to believe impeachment belongs only in the history books for Nixon or for Bill Clinton, whereas if you go back and look at the articles of impeachment that were drawn up and were about to be implemented by the House of Representatives on Richard Nixon, there were numerous articles of impeachment. Some of them made it into the final version, some did not. But, you know, you've mentioned quite a few things, some of which fall under the category of, hey, it is supposed to be Congress that declares war under the Constitution. Congress, although willingly misled, one might say, to put it mildly, Congress was lied to, as were the American people, by President Bush, the Downing Street memo, among other bits of evidence indicating that. So do we have a society, a government based on accountability and consent of the governed, or what do we have here? That is a basic question.
But to bring it back to my question, Norman Solomon, the way that these guys have gotten away with the anthrax attacks of being ignored, Osama bin Laden is still at large, and we're, what, 200 days longer than all the time we were in World War II since 9/11. The crimes of 9/11, or the negligence, the criminal negligence of the Bush administration that led to 9/11 not being really thoroughly investigated, certainly not in a way that would point out what happened with the Bush administration. It seems to me that the complicity of the American media is enormous in this. What makes you think that the American media is suddenly going to change their tune and say, oh, gee, maybe we should investigate George Bush finally?
Well, they're not going to. The push, as always, has to come from the grassroots, people demanding it, organizing, being active, and staying on the case. If there's going to be a watchdog instead of a lapdog entity here, that's not going to be the press corps. It's going to be the grassroots. And that means that we need to change the political terrain through which senators and congresspeople as well as media walk. I think the mass media, as along with being corporate creatures, are very majoritarian. I think of the Bob Dylan line, you just want to be on the side that's winning. And when they smell a little blood in the water, they will move a little bit in that direction. Certainly, I think of the classic political question in a different context, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Well, politically, George Bush, if he asks himself that question now, he's a very unhappy guy. His image has slipped from being the great, you know, the protector of the public to being a real menace to society. And again, I come back to the phrase criminal negligence. Even if people don't care about the war, and they should very deeply, the events of the last 10 days and the hurricane, this should raise not only warning flags, but real impetus to push the question of whether Bush and Cheney are fit to be in office.
But you have Ramsey Clark, who, the former Attorney General of the United States, has drafted articles of impeachment against the president. There have been attempts to get these considered by the House of Representatives. Nobody's willing to go near it.
Well, that's very true.
And this is a campaign that's been coming on 2 years now. And very public. I mean, there's a website for it. There's lots of, you know, there's money for it. There's...
Well, the context is of a warfare state where the major institutions are all contoured around the idea that when a president wants to go to war, we go to war. And as you know, Tom, I spent years researching this book that's just come out, War Made Easy, where I've looked at the patterns of the last 40 years, looking at how time after time the president is able to drag the country into war. And there's really not a lot new under the sun. Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, the kind of lies and boiler
boilerplate sort of spin phrases and lines that they put out. You know, we're told now that we can't cut and run. It's what Lyndon Johnson said as well. People are dying, obviously, not only Americans but Iraqis. Where is the accountability there as well?
We're talking with Norman Solomon. He's the executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, the author of a new book, War Made Easy. And so you think, Norman, you're suggesting that this is a possible thing. What can those of us who would love to see this kind of thing happen do?
Well, I think we need to make the unthinkable thinkable. And that, at this stage, involves on the radio stations that are not in corporate centrist or right-wing control, programs such as this one, media outlets on the web, community radio, television, whatever, community groups. We need to raise these questions loudly and insistently, not let the spin meisters and the media manipulators out of the major corporate entities simply tell us what is realistic and what's not. If we go along with what we're told is on the political radar screen, we're going to be sunk.
Yeah. Accuracy.org, by the way, is the website for the Institute for Public Accuracy if you want to check it out. And Norman Solomon, you're doing great work over there.
Thank you.
Step by step. I mean, what you just described was a lot of good individual steps, but it also seemed sort of a rhetorical umbrella as... You know, one person out there listening, should they be calling their member of Congress? I mean, where do they begin?
Yes. Well, under that umbrella, I think we need to recognize we need to work with others. Yes, I think that people should call their members of Congress. They should write letters to the newspaper. If they don't think their local media outlets are giving sufficient attention and they are sending letters and asking for real coverage, I think it's time to demand meetings. It's time to get out the picket signs. You know, we have been conditioned to believe that if we were to demonstrate and picket in front of a newspaper office, a magazine, a media outlet in general, broadcast, TV, radio, we've been told, hey, you know, somehow you're infringing on the First Amendment. On the contrary, we will enliven the First Amendment if we insist that these huge corporations can't sit on the windpipe of that First Amendment.
Oh, yeah.
So I would urge people to be active, to demand, to be vocal, and say, hey, we need coverage of this criminal enterprise of the Bush administration. Katrina is a great example. Let's go to it. Let's have some real journalism.
Well said. In fact, we saw the effect of that right here in Oregon. The Oregonian, the newspaper, and for the statewide newspaper published in Portland, was not covering the Downing Street memo, and for several days. And a group of people went out and started picketing right in front of them. And
that's
all
great.
Of a sudden, they're covering it. 2 days later, they do like a whole full-page spread on it, and they're like, you know, see, we were planning on covering that all along. You know,
yeah.
You didn't need to picket us.
Right.
So Norman Solomon, the executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, accuracy.org, the author of a new book, War Made Easy. And Norman, thank you for being with us today.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
Keep up the great work. You're
you
one
too.
Of the, one of the great voices in America. 20 minutes past the hour. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. The amount of money that we spent in today's dollars fighting World War I, $205 billion. The amount Congress has appropriated for Iraq so far, $218 billion. $218 billion. World War II, the total length of World War II, 1,365 days. It's been 1,456 days since 9/11. What's wrong with this picture? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Victoria Jones is with us from the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Well, hi, and I know you were expecting Greg. But we're on pool duty at the White House today, and so he had to follow the president to wherever the president's going, and the president's giving a speech, so he's having to stand there and represent radio.
That must be entertaining.
It's always fascinating being on pool duty. Yep, you never know what you're going to be up to. Mm. But one thing he asked me to convey to you, I've been on Capitol Hill and the White House today, one thing he asked me to convey was that MoveOn.org, who was having this protest outside the White House, says categorically that they have not planned, they have no plans and never did have any plans to put an ad out using Hurricane Katrina against John Roberts. They say that
Who
is
says
letter.
They are?
Well, there's a story, I think it's out on Drudge, but I certainly, oh no, I think it's in USA Today. I've seen the story saying that they are.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and they say they're not. They're saying they don't disagree with the idea because it's about civil rights and him being against civil rights. They don't disagree with part of the premise, but that they are not planning to do that.
Right, yeah.
Which is probably just as well, really.
Well, it's like the Washington Post story earlier in the week that quoted the senior administration officials saying that the reason why the hurricane aid to Katrina victims was slow was because the governor of Louisiana was 4 days late in requesting a proclamation of emergency, a declaration
right.
of emergency. And it turns out that senior administration official had lied to a reporter at the Washington Post that she had actually requested that declaration of emergency on Saturday, not on Wednesday, and before the hurricane hit, and that George Bush had signed it on Sunday as the hurricane was hitting. And, it was just an out-and-out lie. From a senior administration official. In fact, the David Brock's group, Accuracy in Media, is calling for the Washington Post to actually out their source. Who was the senior administration official who lied to you?
Well, you see, it's an interesting question because at that point they're really not a source. And why would you need to be secret about something like that?
Yeah, I think that is a story in and of itself. You know, that a senior administration official just lied to the Washington Post, and are we ever going to find out who that senior administration official might be?
I don't know. We're going to find out the senior administration official.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Somehow I think that that's, strangely,
yeah.
the opinion of the Washington Post as well.
I think it may well be. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if there's some questioning going on in the editorial offices, but I don't know that we're going to find anything out. And they at least issued a retraction. Newsweek being a weekly, the story went out and stood.
See, I'm surprised. I'm surprised that that story hasn't become a story. Why is the media not jumping all over going, okay, this administration just lied to the press in the United States in an attempt to create a deliberate distortion which is being repeated today, even today. I guarantee you there's a right-wing talk show host out there somewhere who's saying, well, it says it in the Washington Post, here's what they say, right? Who is repeating that lie that Blanco was late in asking for assistance. And why is the media not asking the question, who was the senior administration official who leaked that information or who put out that information? And why is that not a story, that the White House is lying to the press to spin this?
You know, I don't know the answer, but the first thing that came into my mind was that, number one, people aren't surprised that the administration lied. And second, they're just glad that the administration didn't lie to them and that they didn't screw up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but and they're not surprised by it.
I mean, depressing.
But this
they're
is
not surprised.
Yeah, but this seems to me, I mean, just as an old news guy myself, it seems to me like the news has become the news here, and maybe that's why the news isn't being covered, but I don't know. Victoria Jones, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
It's always great having you on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Come together right now over me.
And welcome back, my friends. 33 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Bonnie in Burgettstown, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Bonnie, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. It sounds like Karl Rove struck again with that last bit of information about, I guess, USA Today talking about MoveOn.org.
Oh, these guys are doing a full press
yeah.
court. They are in every way, it is absolutely, it is war. They're running a war room, and it's all bets are off, take no prisoners, whatever metaphor or cliche you want to use.
It accomplishes two things, because first of all, they change the subject on to John Roberts, and then they get to promote a lie.
Sure.
So, I'm calling to add to the discussion on the moral value of separation of church and state, because I do think it's a moral value, and I have two points. First, when government did little to nothing to promote the general welfare in our first Gilded Age, robber baron period, because we're clearly in the second one now, the church had a monopoly on it, enacting the principles in the Sermon on the Mount, and it must have squandered it because the scope of the task was either too large or the church's resources, you know, just didn't cover it. And just like now, John Calvin's social Darwinism, Trump Jesus, and the church justified its neglecting the Sermon on the Mount. And my second point, well, if you want to chime in here, this is your...
Well, I just... And they neglected Matthew 25, which is even more explicit than the Sermon on the Mount, that, you know, if you want to get into heaven, you have to feed the hungry, clothe
right.
the naked, care for those, give shelter to those who are homeless, give water to those who are thirsty, visit those in prison, take care of the sick. It's just absolutely explicit.
Right. Same book, Matthew, different chapter.
Yeah, there you go.
And the second point is, I'm not a Christian, but God or goddess or universe forbid, if I or my family had to show up at a soup kitchen and I had to sing for my supper, because if that's not happening yet, that's what the entitled to government handout American Taliban will expect.
That is happening now. That is happening.
It doesn't surprise me. And that's anti-freedom. It's anti-American. I think it's anti-Christian. And also, I called 2 or 3 weeks ago and I asked you if you remembered the former dictator's name of Zaire. It's Mobutu.
Mobutu. Thank you.
Yeah, it was killing me. I heard on a different talk show that this author was being interviewed. The name of the book, I can't remember the author's name, but the name of the book is The Most Dangerous Man in America, and it's about Pat Robertson. And it lays out all of his relationships with dictators from all over the world. So it's a pretty good book. I want to get it.
Yeah, it sounds fascinating. In fact, maybe David, we can track somebody. We can track that author down for
our
program.
Well, I can tell you that the guy works for Barry Lynn's organization, Americans Separated for Americans United for Separated. What is it?
Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Yeah.
Right. That's it. Okay.
Yeah, and he's the author of the book that you were just talking about?
Well, not Barry Lynn, but it's somebody who's connected with that organization.
The book is called The Most Dangerous Man in America.
I'm
it's about Pat
sure.
Robertson. Okay.
Yeah, it's an expose on him.
Okay, cool. We'll check it out. We'll track it down. Bonnie, thank you very much for the call. Good
Bye.
To hear from you. 1-866-888-9884. Brian in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, it seems that even that despite the right-wing media, the country's getting a lesson in liberalism today. I don't know. I mean, we have to find some way to get around, you know, the mainstream media and get real information to the population. Your last guest, I believe it was, on the show was suggesting that, you know, we have to get involved and get involved.
Yeah, Norman Solomon. Yeah, get active.
Yeah. One thing that I like to do is, especially like I hear you talking about different news stories, and I'll pull it up on the web and I'll email links or the page to family members, friends, everybody on my email list.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if it would be possible, and this is just a suggestion, but would you be able to put together a news block that your listeners could pull up on your web page, possibly, that would, you know, show the story on, for instance, Howard Dean, you know, in his comments about the president. And we could all mail out these news blocks to people and get information out that way.
Brian, I would love to. Right now, frankly, I don't have the staff or the budget to do it. But if there are volunteers who want to participate, we have a message board. A lot of the things that we talk about actually get posted on our message board. If you drop into the chat room, virtually every topic we talk about, somebody tracks it down, Googles it down, and posts the URL in the chat room in real time. And if you go into the message board, you'll find most of the topics we talk about in there. And you can always ask people, you know, where was this? And somebody almost always within 15 minutes to a couple of hours at the worst will have an answer for you.
Right.
So
right,
so right now, you know, we're relying on volunteer help, as it were, and
yeah,
it's working pretty good. So but we don't have, as you said, a formal site. Yeah, one of these days, hopefully. Thanks for the call, Brian. I appreciate
it. It's working great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for the call. Over the past week, this is from the Think Progress blog, Secretary Chertoff and General Richard Myers have used the talking point. It wasn't just Chertoff. It's Richard Myers. General Richard Myers has said it as well. The talking point that, you know, they read the headlines in the newspapers and it said New Orleans dodged a bullet. So Think Progress comes out and they say, you know, they do this whole expose. There is no newspaper that said Katrina dodged a bullet. Well, it turns out there was one that said something kind of similar to that, that was like in Aruba. But in any case, staffers with the administration scrounged around for real headlines, and they actually found three. Not exactly major newspapers, not, you know, none of the name. So anyhow, Don Rumsfeld yesterday on Sean Hannity's show, again quoting this. The headlines from these newspapers had misled them, he says. In other words, according to Don Rumsfeld, people in the Bush administration do not have the ability to read an article, because all of the articles that had headlines that even implied that a bullet had been dodged went on to say a disaster is unfolding there. So I think it's interesting, isn't it? The Bush administration just doesn't have the ability to even figure this out. They can't. It's just beyond their capability. The TPM Cafe, by the way, blog, tpmcafe.com, has a posting by Rush Holt, Congressman Rush Holt, the representative from New Jersey. And I'm guessing, I'm not real familiar with the TPM Cafe blog, although I'm looking at it right now. I'm guessing that it's probably a blog out of his district. In any case, he writes, late yesterday afternoon, this is posted today, late yesterday afternoon I received word that the House Armed Services Committee has postponed consideration of my resolution of inquiry into the Valerie Plame leak. Okay, just here you've got the situation where Karl Rove, a senior administration official, outed a CIA agent, brought down an entire CIA counterterrorism operation that had been in place for years, possibly led to the death of CIA agents and CIA officers. We don't know. The administration has classified all that information, locked it down totally. They won't tell us. Could have led to more terrorist activities against the United States, because our main way of finding out who were the international terrorists who were buying weapons is gone now. So here you have Karl Rove committing treason against the United States of America, and of course George W. lets him keep his job. And Rush Holt introduces a resolution that simply says, let's inquire into this as Congress. I mean, isn't this something we should look into? The House Armed Services Committee postponed. Now, here's where it gets really amazing. The Republican leadership announced that the reason why they had to postpone any consideration, even a discussion, of Rush Holt's resolution of inquiry into the Plame leak was because of Hurricane Katrina. Sorry. Hurricane Katrina is more important. Well, you know, at a certain level, that makes sense. We can wait a few weeks, and the nation will not fall, and look into Karl Rove. Hurricane Katrina. Excuse me. Hurricane Katrina is a very real, you know, it's a terrible thing, right? We can wait a little bit. But can't we also wait on the John Roberts nomination? Can't we also wait on repealing the inheritance tax? Can't we also wait on reducing capital gains taxes? That's the income tax paid by people who make their living selling stock. No, 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 they say. These things are all very important. But investigating treason in the White House? No, sorry. Got to put that off. We just, you know, there's important stuff. We just can't deal with that one right now. Sorry. It's just, it's really too important. I spoke yesterday briefly, I think, about global warming and about this incredible presentation that I attended given by the only president of the United States who was never president of the United States, Al Gore. And it was here in Portland, Oregon, and I'm telling you, if his roadshow comes to your town, do whatever you've got to do to go see this presentation that Al Gore gives. It is brilliant. He's one of the best public speakers around, and it's one of the most brilliantly put together presentations I've ever seen. And now here, Reuters, global warming is causing soil to release huge amounts of carbon, making efforts to fight global warming tougher than previously thought, scientists said on Wednesday. This is in the journal Nature. Just in England alone, because the soil is being warmed up, you've got, you know, carbon that had been trapped in plant matter, in organic matter, is being released more rapidly than it should be. And in some cases, carbon that had been sequestered for thousands of years, like peat bogs, is being released into the atmosphere. 13 million tons a year, just in the British, just in England and Wales. Professor Guy Kirk of Cranfield University told journalists at a science conference in Dublin, "Our findings suggest the soil part of the equation is scarier than we had thought. The consequences there is that there is more urgency about doing something." And what is it that's causing this increase in that it's getting warmer? This is, I've talked to you before about this, it's a positive feedback loop instead of a negative feedback loop. The way a thermostat works is the furnace is on until it reaches a certain temperature, and then it shuts the furnace off. That's called a negative feedback loop. In other words, when it achieves its goal, it says no. It stops the heat source. The way global warming works is as it gets warmer, ice melts, and water and soil become visible. They absorb more heat. So as it becomes warmer, the ice melts, and then it absorbs even more heat. So it gets even warmer. And the original warming caused by the increase in carbon in the atmosphere, as that warming happens, it warms the soil, which releases more carbon, which then makes it warmer. This is called a positive feedback loop. Positive feedback loops are generally considered to be kind of a bad thing because they lead to runaway processes, out-of-control processes. Not good. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, this thing of the Bush administration using the headlines excuse.
Yeah.
Saying, well, anyway, they're trapping themselves in a corner because any way you look at that, it's bad. One is they're saying, well, we have no government information source to rely on.
Right, yeah. So we have to look at the newspapers to find out what's going on in the world.
Yeah, and since Bush doesn't read newspapers, that's saying Bush is getting no information.
Right. There you go. Thank you.
Okay, then. Then if they're saying we're trying to rely more on the private sector, well, then obviously that's failing. So if they're being misled by the newspapers, it indicates we need a government source to find out about these disasters. They should have agents down there reporting on the disasters rather than them relying on newspapers.
Well, the reality
is, they're going
to
come out hours after the information.
Well, yeah, the reality is. The reality is that they do, Jeff. I mean, we all know that this is just a lie. It's just another administration lie. That Rumsfeld had the audacity to go on Sean Hannity's show yesterday after this lie had been exposed and repeated just demonstrates in my mind how desperate these guys are.
But for argument's sake, they're trapping themselves. Just like with the thing with Karl Rove. Bush said that Karl Rove, you know, he checked with people and they weren't involved. So that it's either Karl Rove lied to Bush or Bush lied.
One or the other. Yeah. And
it's absolutely a fact that either Bush or Karl Rove lied. So one of them deserves not to be in government or both.
Yeah. Well said. Jeff, thank you for sharing that.
Take care.
Always insightful. Jesse in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hey, I was just calling to see if you've already discussed the most scary and self-serving Senator Rick Santorum about how he felt the survivor should be fined
Right, because they failed to leave when the evacuation order.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we discussed this yesterday. Rick Santorum showing that he really and truly is out of touch with America. You know, I'll bet when they say, you know, 45 million Americans don't have health insurance, I'll bet his response would be, well, why don't they choose to buy it?
And this is a guy who wants to run for president.
Yeah.
That's why I'm glad you discussed it, because it is, he's a frightening character.
Well, here's the flip side of that. I'll bet that if you said to George W. Bush, there's 45 million people without health insurance, he would say, well, why don't they choose to buy it?
Oh, I know.
I mean, all these multimillionaires are so completely out of touch with what it's like to live in America on a paycheck. They're clueless. Mm. They're absolutely clueless.
They're reckless.
Yeah, they're reckless. Well said, Jesse.
Self-serving.
And they have elevated greed to an art form. Jesse, thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you. And I do appreciate it very much. What are we going to do? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to get politically active. There's an election coming in just, 12, 13, 14 months, something like that. We've got to get active. We've got to get out there, get involved. Do it now.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 55 and a half minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. Well, it is now being reported on MSNBC, a triumvirate of Republican power brokers may give Mississippi first dibs in post-Hurricane Katrina grab for federal disaster funds instead of New Orleans, Louisiana. That's because the Mississippi Senator Thad Cochran is chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, the panel charged with determining how much and where the recovery money will be spent. And, and Trent Lott, of course, from Mississippi. And Governor Haley Barbour, former Republican National Committee chairman, Mississippi governor. Between these three, they're going to see to it. Mississippi gets the money. Forget about it. New Orleans, Louisiana, money? Come on, they've got a Democrat for a senator. New Orleans had a Democrat for a mayor. They're not going to get any federal money. Or at least if they are, they're going to have to get in line behind Mississippi. Tim in Illinois on the line. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Now, we don't need no stinking New Orleans. Talking about those guys you just talked about.
Oh, we don't need no, you're making a joke about, yeah.
Hey, listen, I want to run something by you. I know of someone here in Illinois who's considering a run to unseat the Republican congressional representative from the 18th District. His name is Ray LaHood.
Yeah.
Staunch Bush supporter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this person who is considering this run is going to do so on the basis of one message to the public. I will vote for articles of impeachment of George Bush. And that is the message, and that is the sole thing he's going to run on. And also, he's going to do this well in advance of the whatever the cycle is that people typically announce running for office.
Well, my guess is he'll win.
Well, I think it's a terrific idea, and I would encourage anybody out there in the United States who's considering running for Congress to unseat one of these Bush supporters and say, I'm going to run to vote for articles of impeachment.
Yeah, yeah.
Do it right away.
Yeah, I don't.
Do it right away.
Yeah, good one on you, Tim. Thanks.
Okay.
And tell that guy, Tim, if you're still there, tell that guy who's thinking of running that we'd love to have him on the radio program. Tell him to get in touch with us. Phone number 866-889-8894, and you can just call that when we're on the air. And David Poole is around. He can just take the call, and he'll set it up. How's that? So we'll see how that works out. Telling the truth, the multinational corporations, really rather you didn't know about. Talk radio for the rest of us. I'm Tom Hartman. Thanks for being with us today. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.